Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Today we are discussing two investigations from ProPublica. Later in the show, we'll discuss a piece that found more than 40 cases of immigration agents using banned chokeholds and other moves that can cut off breathing. But first, we turn to a ProPublica piece on abortion. Yesterday marked the 53rd anniversary of the landmark Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, which guaranteed the right to an abortion nationwide. The conservatives on the Supreme Court overturned Roe in June 2022. As a result, abortion is now banned in 13 Republican-controlled states. It's heavily restricted in another 10. Women living in states with abortion bans are nearly twice as likely to die during pregnancy, childbirth, or soon after giving birth compared to those living in states where abortion is legal and accessible, according to a report last year from the Gender Equity Policy Institute. Black women living in banned states are 3.3 times as likely to die as their white counterparts. Joining us is Lizzie Presser, a journalist covering health and social policy for ProPublica. Lizzie and her colleague Kavita Sarana wrote the piece, "A Pregnant Woman at Risk of Heart Failure Could Not Get Urgent Treatment. She Died Waiting for an Abortion." They report that in North Carolina, a state that has legislated its, quote, commitment to life, C.G. Graham spent her final days struggling to find anyone to save hers. Last year, along with three colleagues, Lizzie Presser was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Public Service for her reporting on the preventable deaths that followed abortion bans. That piece spurred lawmakers in multiple states to file bills expanding access to abortion. Hi, Lizzie. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Just a couple of days ago, you and Kavita wrote another piece called Women with High-Risk Pregnancies Have Limited Options Under Abortion Bans. And I just wonder, Lizzie, given that so much is happening in this country, we even have not talked about abortion in a couple of months. And when I was telling people about your piece, they said, wow, I have not really read about abortion in a couple months. And I think it's because of what we're seeing with ICE and the brutality of what's happening there, and then just what's coming out of the White House on a regular basis. It's so hard to keep up. What are your thoughts overall about national media coverage of abortion and where we are today?
I think it's a really good question. And actually, I was just talking about this with my colleagues at ProPublica too, how confusing it can be sometimes to look around and feel like abortion isn't getting the kind of coverage it was getting even a year ago. And it's, as you say, there's so much happening at such a rapid pace coming out of this administration. I think the other piece of it, though, is that some people are starting to see this as a new state of being. And for us at ProPublica, we're trying to keep our lens focused on the effects of these new bans and restrictions on women across the country. That has been our mandate from the beginning, and we're trying to continue that work. But as you say, I think we've also been somewhat disappointed to see how the issue has faded from the spotlight in the last several months as well. And this work is not easy, right? It takes a ton of time and investment.
Exactly. And I really just want to highlight ProPublica, you and your colleagues' work, because you all are not putting stories out every day. You're not trying to beat the competition. I mean, you're doing such in-depth reporting, and it takes a lot of time, right? Because a couple of the questions I've been thinking a lot about since we decided to have you on is how many people, how many women, girls are being forced to have children that they do not want? And then the question that you ask in this latest piece, who are the women who are most likely to suffer because of these new laws? How are you able to find answers to these questions? Are there groups trying to find the numbers, looking at the states where abortion is banned? What does that look like?
You know, these are all really good questions and ones that we've been tackling from a number of different directions. I think the question of how we find anyone who's affected by these laws is in some ways the most interesting from a reporting standpoint, which is that we are sending freedom of information requests to medical examiners state by state, county by county. We are getting lists of everyone who has died, sometimes just women who are pregnant, often it's everyone, and then filtering for keywords that might be related to pregnancy, and then going back, requesting autopsies, and then reaching out to the families to learn more. And that's how we found C.G. Graham, who we wrote about recently, through some of those freedom of information requests, through the autopsy, and then me flying down to North Carolina and knocking on the doors of her family members and relatives. And it's only in that step where you get the full story, where you hear from people who she was speaking to before she died, where she's explaining what the doctors are telling her, what it's like to try to seek an abortion. So that's kind of the bigger picture. But as you mentioned, how do we kind of get a sense of who is most affected? I mean, this is something that we've been hearing from doctors across the country for the past year, particularly doctors who specialize in high-risk pregnancies. And previous to Dobbs and the overturn of Roe, these doctors would see women who had, often they came in with chronic conditions already, like C.G. Graham, who had a history of atrial fibrillation. Cardiac conditions are some of the most common. And they get pregnant, and that pregnancy puts their health condition at greater risk. It exacerbates whatever sickness they had before, because there's all the stress that's newly on the body. And before these new bans, they would say to their patients, okay, here's what's happening. Here are the risks of continuing the pregnancy. Here are the potential benefits of a termination. And, you know, I'm here to decide with you what you think is best for you, right? It's this kind of shared decision-making model where a patient knows and understands all of those risks. Since Dobbs, those doctors are saying we can no longer really even have those conversations. Because previously we could say there's an abortion clinic down the street, right? I can help you figure out how to terminate this pregnancy if that's what you decide. Previously, they weren't under tighter policy guidelines from hospitals that are now saying don't talk about this unless it's a legal option for these patients. And for most patients with chronic conditions who enter pregnancy, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of women every year, abortion is no longer an option. You need to be facing a life-threatening emergency. And they're not, right? They're not likely to die. They're carrying a small chance of death and perhaps a greater risk of long-term health complications. But the activists who have put in place these bans have fought very hard to make sure that those women are not exempted from these bans on health concerns alone. The exceptions are for life-threatening emergencies, not for your long-term health. And that's what we wanted to investigate in the last several pieces that we've been working on.
Can you go back to what you told us earlier about filing freedom of information requests? You're doing this with state medical offices?
It's easiest when there are state medical offices, but in many states, you have to actually go county by county to medical examiners. So figure out who are the coroner, who's the medical examiner in every county in the state, and send requests to them. In some states, you can get statewide data sets, but that's more rare, we found. And so it's hundreds of these requests that we're putting out and have been putting out for the past year to get back just databases to understand who is dying while they're pregnant and why.
How often are you finding that people are dying because of these bans and restrictions?
So that question takes a long time to discern, right? So what we can see in the data sets are potential cases, but we don't know until we speak to the families and look at the medical records ourselves. So it's extraordinarily time intensive to figure out why did this person die and could they have gotten better care had these bans not been in place. And we've written about 7 women at this point who have died after they were unable to access standard care in states that severely restricted abortion. The thing that is alarming that you hinted at the beginning of the show is that, you know, the same legislators who have put these new bans and restrictions in place are not asking the same questions we are. They are not trying to measure what are the consequences of these laws on the health and the lives of the women in their states. And so we do really feel like we are some of the only people out there asking this question in a meticulous way.
Have you been able to ask these legislators, and the overwhelming majority are Republicans, that's just a fact, have you been able to ask them and the anti-choice organizations that have worked so hard to get these abortion bans and restrictions on the books, have you been able to ask them about C.G. Graham's case, for example, and what's their response?
We have been trying to ask legislators about C.G. Graham's case and others. Previous to C.G., we wrote about Tierra Walker in Texas, who died when she was asking her doctors over and over again for an abortion to protect her health. She had very high uncontrolled blood pressure, and everything pointed to what would be a very complicated pregnancy and the possibility of severe preeclampsia, which can be deadly. And that is what she developed and how she died, even after asking for that care. So we've been putting these questions to legislators. We've, you know, really gotten very little back. And I think one thing we've seen from this reporting is that it is not, it's not an immediate reaction that we often get with this. It's what we see this, someone said to us, you know, this is kind of like civil rights reporting. It's a drip, drip, drip. You have to keep on going until there's a kind of shift in the public understanding of what the dangers and harms are.
And we should say Tierra Walker was a 37-year-old dental assistant and mother in Texas. On his 15th birthday, her son found her draped over her bed. I mean, these stories are absolutely horrific. Let's talk also about your latest piece about C.G. Graham, who was a 34-year-old police officer, a mother of a 2-year-old boy. She visited a cardiologist in Greensboro, North Carolina, while having an episode of atrial fibrillation. Her heart was pounding at 192 beats a minute, a rate healthy people her age would reach at the peak of a sprint, leaving her at risk of a stroke or heart failure. Can you take it from there? What happened to her when her heart started pounding so quickly?
So usually C.G. Graham would get a procedure called a cardioversion. It's an electrical shock to the heart to bring that heart into rhythm and back down to a normal rate. That's because your heart can't continue beating at 192 beats per minute for very long. It'll eventually be unable to keep up with the needs of your body, and that's how you will go into heart failure. But when she showed up to her cardiologist's office, her cardiologist told her that she could not give her that procedure because she was pregnant. And that's according to texts that we saw that CG sent. That's not the case. We spoke to more than a dozen experts and read through the expert consensus and guidelines. Cardioversion is safe and effective in pregnancy. CG didn't know this, and her doctor didn't say so. She went to a second cardiologist the following day who did not check that her heart rate had come down with an EKG, and he scheduled or started to prepare her for a cardioversion in 3 weeks, which is a long time to wait when your heart is moving at a sprint. So CG felt like the best option for her health was to schedule an abortion so that she would be able to get the care that she typically got, just the standard of care for her cardiac condition. When she did that, though, she found that it would be a 2-week wait. Again, a really long time to wait with a heart rate at 192 beats per minute. And it was 2 weeks because North Carolina had just changed its laws and added a 72-hour in-person consent visit, which means they had doubled the number of visits that a woman needs to make to an abortion clinic to get a procedure. So that was clogging up the appointment slot. And then on top of that, the neighboring states, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, had even stricter bans. Abortion was banned at conception or at 6 weeks. And so women were flooding North Carolina, where it was banned after 12 weeks, to get the care that they needed in their first trimester. And so these abortion bans, you see, have these spillover effects to their neighbors. And so for both of those reasons, the median wait time in the state around the time CG was looking for one was 2 weeks, and that's what she faced. And she died in bed 5 days after she made that appointment. I think what, you know, leaving behind her 2-year-old son, who is now 4 years old, and a spitting image of his mother, just the sweetest, most mischievous, good-natured child. The thing that sits with me in both her case and Tierra's is that the way that these laws are written is they permit doctors to intervene and intervene very quickly, urgently, when there is a fast-moving emergency, when a woman is hemorrhaging, when a woman is developing sepsis, when a woman's membranes rupture too early and there's a high risk of infection, right? In those cases, there is room for the doctors to interpret the law as allowing them to intervene and provide women with the life-saving care that they need. In cases like CGs and tiaras, these are slow-moving emergencies where the risk of death is low, even if it's present. Yet they're still unable to get that urgent care because there are not exceptions in these laws for the health of the mother.
What are you hearing from doctors in these states? Because in many cases, these women have multiple people working with them. Their healthcare team is fairly large, and yet no one could stand up and say, we have to save this woman's life? Is it because they're afraid of going to jail? I mean, what is the reasoning behind this?
The doctors in Tierra's case and in CJ's case declined to speak with us, so we can't speak for what's going on in their heads, right? What we can speak to is what we hear from doctors across abortion ban states, which is that they see their colleagues who are hesitating to act, unwilling to act, prefer not to act when they're not 100% sure that it is, you know, safe to do so legally, not safe for the patient, right? When they're not 100% sure that they could not get into legal trouble. The thing that I think this story really drives home for me is that we are, for a long time, have been living in a country with the worst maternal mortality rate of any developed nation. And so many physicians warned the public when Roe was overturned that this was already the state of our country and that these bans and restrictions were going to make it worse. And I do think that's what we see in the case of C.G. Graham and Tierra Walker, right? These are women who should have gotten much better care in pregnancy, were already kind of trapped or stuck in a system that wasn't working very well for them at all, as it hasn't been for a really long time in this country. And then on top of that, you layer these restrictions, these abortion restrictions that have these criminal penalties attached. And you add more hesitation, more fear, more confusion to a system that is already failing these women. And what you're going to get are delays. And what these women need is urgent treatment.
Today, we're speaking with Lizzie Presser, a journalist covering health and social policy for ProPublica. She and her colleague, Kavita Serrana, wrote the piece, "A Pregnant Woman at Risk of Heart Failure Could Not Get Urgent Treatment. She Died Waiting for an Abortion." Her name was C.G. Graham. She was a 34-year-old police officer and a mother of a 2-year-old who is now a 4-year-old without a mom. Lizzie, we looked at some data from the Gender Equity Policy Institute, and they've just found that obviously women living in states that have banned abortion are nearly twice as likely to die during pregnancy, childbirth, or soon after giving birth compared to those living in states where abortion is illegal. But it's so important to drill down on this because Black women living in banned states are 3.3 times as likely to die as their white counterparts. And then when you look at, as you mentioned, maternal mortality, across the board, it fell 21% in states where abortion is legal, but it rose 56% in Texas. In the first year of their abortion ban, women's risk of maternal death in Texas is 155% higher than in California. And Latina moms in Texas face nearly triple the risk of maternal mortality as those in California. So we're in a situation where if you're living in a state with abortion bans, your likelihood of dying is so much higher than if you live in a place like California. And, you know, I remember talking to activists early on and they said, it's so difficult because so many of these women cannot afford to leave the state for so many reasons. There was such a focus on that. Well, if you do need care, you can always leave the state. But a lot of these activists living in these places say, no, some people can't afford it. They've got kids, they've got jobs. It's not that easy. So can you talk about, I mean, these stats are just horrific, especially when you think about Black women living in banned states, 3 times more likely to die as their white counterparts.
You know, it's really disturbing. It is not surprising because these are statistics that have been a part of our national story for far too long, but it is extraordinarily disturbing, right? Like this is, we see it anecdotally too in the research that we do when we are pulling these death records, where so many of the women's cases that we are flagging and then going to research are cases of Black women. Tierra Walker, a Black woman, C.G. Graham, a Black woman. And we should be clear, these women were suffering some of the worst maternal mortality rates long before these abortion restrictions were put into place. And then the restrictions make it worse. And so what we're seeing in these states in that report that you're citing is not just an effect of the bans. It is an effect of layering these bans onto states that are already failing pregnant women and failing Black and Latino pregnant women, you know, at much higher rates. So that is something that we know from the data, and it is something that we have been seeing in our reporting, unfortunately. And again, it is extremely disturbing. Yeah.
There's also another layer to this. Women can become trapped in abusive relationships when they can't access abortion. Can you talk about how these bans endanger women beyond the health risks of pregnancy or childbirth?
I think it's a really important question that more people should be asking. We've also started to see it in some of our reports, but we haven't, in some of our data requests, but we haven't tracked it down fully yet. We do see a lot of pregnant women who are dying by homicide and intimate partner violence in this data. And we know that women who are pregnant are more likely to die by that intimate partner violence. This isn't just a medical emergency. There's also suicide. We're seeing a bunch of suicide records as well. And so how are women dying by violence and by drugs and suicide is a major question that I think kind of remains to be answered, when looking specifically at these abortion bans.
Can you tell us more about what you're finding with the suicide data? Because that's just not getting the attention it deserves, sadly.
I agree. It's still too early. I mean, right now it's just anecdote. So we don't have any kind of clear data findings at the moment, but it is certainly something that we are interested in continuing to dig into and hope we'll be joined by colleagues in that quest, because it is so, suicide and drug overdoses are such a major part of maternal mortality. They deserve extra attention.
You know, Lizzie, I'd love for you in our final minutes to talk more about what you're thinking as a reporter who is able to spend the time to find these cases. Again, you were telling us earlier that you have to file Freedom of Information Act requests with medical examiners county by county to find this information. And something I think about whenever we do shows about abortion is that when you look at the data, 75 to 90% of people in the United States support the right to choose. They support the right to have an abortion. And so you might be wondering, okay, if that's the case, people would be wondering, especially outside of this country, how is it that we're in this position where if you have the overwhelming majority of people supporting the right to an abortion, and yet we have, 13 abortion bans in Republican-controlled states, and then it's heavily restricted in another 10. And I think about this New York Times piece that came out in May of 2024 that was pretty head-spinning. Nearly 1 in 5 voters in battleground states said Biden was responsible for ending the constitutional right to an abortion. And I think that just speaks to this crazy media world that we're in right now, where people are getting their information from such a wide range of sources. A lot of these sources do not provide factual information. And a lot of people are misinformed if they think 17% of voters blamed Biden for the end of Roe. So I wonder what your thoughts are, given this new media landscape that we are living in. What are you hoping in terms of trying to get these pieces out to people so they know what is happening in these states where abortion is banned and restricted?
I think what I'm focusing on right now is is the concept of the life of the mother. So often we hear people say, oh, but there are exceptions for the life of the mother. And they believe that abortion is not permitted unless, you know, there is a concern for the life of the mother. And what we have found in our reporting is that the term life of the mother is defined so narrowly as to be almost meaningless. Mm-hmm. It generally means that we are looking at a life-threatening emergency, something imminent, so that a doctor has to say, this person is very likely to die very soon. That gives me permission to act, right? Those cases are so rare, Rose. That means that a person has come to the hospital, has been in the hospital, is being seen by physicians at a time when they are on the cusp of death. But most people, emergencies, the concept of emergency, health risks, those things don't get you, you don't get to the hospital in time to get care. Both C.G. Graham and Tara Walker died while sleeping. That's far more common, is women who are carrying extraordinary risk and aren't able to get the care that they want to protect their health and potentially their lives because of these bans. So the whole idea of the life of the mother to me is a twisted one, where people think, okay, women are safe, they have these exceptions. And what we are seeing in our reporting is they are absolutely not safe. And those exceptions generally don't apply to them because they're not on the brink of death when they need care. Mm-hmm. That happens too fast and they can't get the care that they need at that time. And that's what I'm hoping that we'll be able to show.
Lizzie Presser is a journalist covering health and social policy for ProPublica, an investigative journalism outlet in the public interest. She and her colleague Kavita Serrano wrote the piece, "A Pregnant Woman at Risk of Heart Failure Could Not Get Urgent Treatment. She Died Waiting for an Abortion." And her name, it was C.G. Graham, a 34-year-old police officer, a mom of a 2-year-old boy who is now 4. You can also find their other piece that they just wrote, "Women with High-Risk Pregnancies Have Limited Options Under Abortion Bans." Our reporting has found that abortion bans generally do not include exceptions that cover health concerns pregnant women with chronic conditions can face, or if they do, doctors are not using them. Lizzie, huge thanks to you and Kavita and your team at ProPublica for the very important work that you're all doing, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on to talk about this.
Thank you. You can find these pieces at kalw.org and then click news. Coming up after a break, we'll talk about another ProPublica investigation. It found more than 40 cases of ICE agents using banned chokeholds and other moves that can cut off breathing. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. We'll be back after this.